And I'm a horrible waffler.
Well, we've just introduced this interview with Gillian O'Shaughnessy for the Fremantle Shipping News, with Gillian saying what she just said. But I'm sure she's not a horrible waffler. Now, this is an entirely unexpurgated and unedited interview. Welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Gillian.
Hello. Thank you, Michael.
Now, I'm not sure how you feel sitting on the other side of the microphone. Have you done that before?
I have a couple of times. Very weird, generally. I'm used to being on your side of the microphone. So it's all uncomfortable.
So, with the job you now do, afternoons with 720 ABC, where you get to talk to all sorts of people, did you ever go through in your radio or television or other public media experiences with some form of training for doing it?
Yeah, I had... well, when I started at the ABC, I started in the newsroom, and there was... Well, I have to say, on my first day, without very much experience at all, I was asked to cut a 15-second grab from an interview. I think it was with the Premier, who was on our opposing radio station at the time. And I had never used the editing suite that we had there before, and someone just chucked a manual on my lap and said, "There it is, work it out." So training could be a little bit ad hoc. And a lot of it you learn on the job. But... there's so much to learn in that kind of environment, I think. There's so much technology that changes all the time, and there's so many things that you have to think about. So we do things like air checks, and we do, you know, training courses. I mean, you're constantly updating your skills and learning how to do it and learning how to do it better.
Well, I'm entirely indebted to Steve Jobs, who invented the iPhone and found this the most wonderful thing ever invented. Do reporters, news people these days use such simple technology as this?
Oh, absolutely. When I started, all of the interviews you did had to be studio quality, and so you would get people into the studio, and any kind of outside noise would be, you know, carefully kind of produced around it, and most of the stuff you did would be very high quality and really good production levels. Now we use smartphones all the time when we do interviews, which is fantastic, you know, because if I'm out on the street and I see something that's interesting, or I see a person that's interesting, or something that's happening that's interesting, I can just whip out my phone and do an interview, and often do. I think that's a great part of the job.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What's an example of that?
Oh, I did... what did I do? Oh, I was at the Chinese festival, the Chinese New Year festival, earlier on in the year, and I just talked to people about what they were doing and what they were looking at and why they were there and how they felt about it, and that was great. I was just there, and it was just a really nice little piece of something happening in Perth.
You think people, in your experience, are happy to talk if a microphone's thrust at them?
I imagine most people are pretty good at saying if they're not. People generally give you signals if they don't want to talk to you. I think I'm pretty sensitive to those signals if somebody decides that they don't want to have a chat. But, yeah, most of the time I think people are happy to say hello, and I'm not generally asking very intrusive questions.
Now, you've had quite a career, as I've already mentioned, in radio and television and the like. When did all of that start, and how on earth did you get into it?
Well, it was difficult to get into. I'd just finished my degree at Murdoch, which I started in psychology, and I finished in communications. And during the last part of that, I did some radio with a very close friend of mine, Niall Lucy, who loved radio. He's an academic, but he spent a lot of time working with my mum at RTR and at Curtin Radio. So he nagged me senseless to do some. And I really loved it. I did a documentary. It was my first piece of radio. I did a six-part documentary series of Chilean immigration into Western Australia, and these were all Fremantle stories because we have a really large population of Chilean migrants in Fremantle, one of the largest in Australia. And they were just such, you know, such interesting different stories, and I really wanted to do radio. The only jobs at the ABC, I was quite interested in Radio National, the only jobs going at the ABC at the time were in the newsroom because there was a freeze on hiring at the time. So I studied, I think, for about 3 months for an exam that you had to sit before the job interview where they'd weed out people. And I could have named the Shadow Cabinet of India. I studied so hard for that. I just was so desperate.
I won't test you now.
No, that was a while ago, 20 years ago.
What was your ambition then? You mentioned Radio National.
I wanted to work for Radio National. I wanted to make radio documentaries. I really, that was what I enjoyed doing.
Were you interested in television as a medium?
No, not at all.
And when, before you got there, what training exposure? What about at school? Did you get into radio or TV? Acting, anything like that?
Yeah, I was. I did the performing arts course at John Curtin from when I was 14, and I loved that. I loved theatre, so I had ambitions there for a while. My mum worked in radio for a long time. She was one of the founding members of 6NR, which is now Curtin Radio, and she managed what is now RTR.
Well, I can say that Fremantle Shipping News endorses RTR. It's our favourite station.
It's a fantastic station. They're both great stations. I love community radio. And so my sister and I were just basically brought up on a radio room floor, and I think, as is often natural with the stuff that your parents do, that totally turned me off it. I thought it was a very boring job. We played with the reel-to-reel tape a little bit. I made dresses for my Barbie dolls out of it, but I had no ambition to be in radio whatsoever. It gave me an excellent education in music, I have to say, because Mum had a good ear for it. But no, I just wasn't particularly interested until, again, my friend Niall nagged me and said that, you know, you really have to try it, and I did, and I just find radio a more connected medium than television. I find television cold and distant. Radio, well, as you're doing now, you can just whip out your phone and talk to anyone about anything pretty much any time, and I love that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Niall, Lucy, we use his This Is Our Town words for Fremantle Shipping News. It's a really lovely touch. Now, how long have you lived in and around Fremantle?
About 42 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't think you'd be that old.
Ah, look. I love it. My mum brought me here. I was born in Bunbury, and Mum brought me here when I was about 8. And I was completely horrified, I had to say. I came from a very suburban part of Bunbury, and I think our only takeaway was Kentucky Fried Chicken. And the only restaurant in town was a Chinese restaurant, so that was about as avant-garde as we got. All of our meals were sliced white bread and frozen peas and carrots and mashed potato and a chop on the side.
That's not a complaint, Mum.
No. So we came to Fremantle, and my mum turned hippie fairly quickly and took to caftans and bare feet, and my sister and I were totally horrified. I'd never seen an aubergine in my life. I didn't know what a zucchini was, fresh vegetables. So, you know, we arrive in this place that is full of orange people and hippies and markets and little Italian delis and schools that were just, you know, full of different people from different backgrounds. And I have to say, it took me a little while to get into it. Mum was really keen that I went to the local community school, Lance Holt, and I was totally horrified.
You didn't have a uniform.
I didn't have a uniform. I really wanted a uniform. We didn't even have an iron.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I went to South Fremantle High School, and my sister and I, we begged our mum for an iron for Christmas so that we could iron our school shirts. We used to lay them flat underneath the mattress. And the first thing she did when we moved into one of our many houses around Fremantle was dig up the Hills hoist. So Mum wore a lot of cheesecloth, so that dried very easily when she dangled them on the bushes outside the house.
I love caftans and cheesecloth. There's not enough of it around anymore.
Well, I really just wanted a pencil skirt. I was going to South Fremantle High School at the time, which was full of bogans, and I didn't fit in particularly well there. So when I went to John Curtin, I thought, this is my chance to transform myself. So I had a pencil skirt. I had a brand new pair of sneakers, which I wrote names of bands and boys on in black outline texter so that they would stay. They were brand new, so I'm not sure that they quite had the look that...
Leaving aside the boys' names.
Yeah.
What were the band's names then?
Oh, then I loved the Knack. I was desperately in love with the Knack. I wrote long and heartfelt love letters to the lead singer, Doug Farger, on the inside pages of my Archie comics to keep them private. I loved the Ted Murray Gang. I actually really loved Chubby Checker as well. And early Elvis Presley. I loved the Sun Sessions.
You've got your mother to thank for that.
Yeah. Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my attempts at being a well-rounded bogan with Simon and Garfunkel written on my sneakers didn't work very well.
Yeah.
No.
Now, have you ever reflected on what this move from suburban Bunbury, I hadn't realised there were any areas of Bunbury that weren't suburban, but you come to Fremantle
yeah.
and around here, and you've described your mother's approach to life at that time, that how that influenced your life and made you the way you are?
No, but I will now.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a hybrid. You know, my dad still lives in Eton and he, you know, had the same job for 40 years and lived in a very small area of the same place. And mum was a hippie, read tarot cards and listened to a lot of music. And took us to see lots of music as well as kids, which is really nice, and did the same with my daughter. So I think I'm a bit of a...
You grow up in a couple of worlds.
Yeah.
You understand both.
But I connected really, really quickly and easily to Fremantle because there were lots of people that you didn't have to, I don't think, worry so much about being a certain type of person because there were so many different types of people here.
It's one of the great things about Fremantle, isn't it? Do you have a favourite part of Fremantle? Do you have a favourite walk, anything like that?
I have, well, apart from my quite run-down little 50s house that I love sitting on the back deck and with my bloke and breathing in the sea air, that's my favourite part. But I love the harbour. I just love it. I catch the train a lot of mornings and I'm such a news junkie that I'm constantly looking at the news, but I always put my phone down and just look out at the harbour. It just gives me such a beautiful feeling. And I remember as kids we used to go down there all the time on South Mole and have fish and chips and run over the rocks. And that was a connecting thing for me as well because I initially really missed my dad and my home when we moved up here, and the ocean here was such a connecting thing for me. So yeah. I always spent a lot of time there, and I loved I loved those big rocks that line down at Bathers Beach, and you could scramble over those and paddle in the water and swim, and it's beautiful. And I just love watching the ships go in. I love the smell of it. I love the working port. Just gives me such a full heart, Michael.
Well, I was swimming at South Beach yesterday, and you suddenly look up and you see this huge ship finding its way just a little bit further north into the harbour. I mean, these things happen around you, and provides a lot of excitement, really.
Yeah, you feel like you feel like the air of the place is just changing, and there's new people moving in and moving out, and it's never still.
In your 42 years from being a girl going through school and university and being here all and around here all that time, what have been the significant changes? Are there any that you look back on and wish never happened?
No, I don't think so. I think I've been really lucky to be in Frio over the time I have, because when we got here it was a really, really poor area. I think there were probably pockets of it that weren't, but we always lived in pretty much the quite poor areas. And I remember my mum bought a house in South Fremantle on Commercial Road when I was about 17, 18.
Commercial Road.
My sister and I refused to walk in and have a look at it because we said it was too far out of Fremantle and it was full of hoons. And it was at the time. It was like ages out of Fremantle. Fremantle was a much more, smaller place then. And the America's Cup happened, which I didn't like at the time because I just felt like my beautiful little quiet town was just taken over by tourists. And
so did you to adapt to those changes? Did you?
I think they're fantastic. You know, I mean, I grizzled at not being able to get a seat at Papa Luigi's for a while, but I think when the rest of Perth was kind of, you know, knocking down old buildings and putting up new ones, the fact that Fremantle was a bit of a misfit place, you know, and it didn't have a lot of money in it, meant that we kept all of that, and it's beautiful now. And I think that even though I hated the America's Cup and the influx of tourists at the time, that put money into it at a really important time. So
I've never stopped to think myself about how Fremantle might be today if we'd won the America's Cup.
Wow.
That is, we retained it here in Fremantle. What would have happened?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it would have lost some of its grotty edges, and they're my favourite.
So when you describe Fremantle, different parts of Fremantle perhaps, to friends and acquaintances who don't know it, maybe live in other parts of Australia or the world, how do you describe it?
Oh, I just say it's the best place in the world. It's beautiful.
And challenges as to why that is, what makes it the best place in the world?
I think the people make it the best place in the world. There's just so much difference and so many different conversations, so much happening, you know, beautiful music and it's just... And I love being near the ocean. I have to be near the ocean, and I think that just gives it a light and a freshness and... I think the fact that it has a working port, and we've talked about that new people come in and out with the tides, that gives it an energy that other places don't have. I think the fact that it's kind of most of my Fremantle anyway is kind of bounded by water, that it makes it a little niche place. I don't think it shuts people out, but I think it gives people that live there a real sense of community. So even though it's international, but it's like a country town as well, because I think it has really kept that beautiful sense of community, which I love.
And do you particularly relate to the architecture or the non-architecture of parts of Fremantle?
I do. I love the particular pieces, you mean?
Yes. Are there particular things that you love to walk past or to see, or precincts that you're particularly taken with?
I love, I love the West End because I love all the old buildings there. I love walking along Marine Terrace where the old, they're not so old, the shipping yards are and Fisherman's Harbour. I was just outside the beautiful, I was outside Clancy's yesterday, and I love that gorgeous big Celtic cross that stands underneath the old Moreton Bay fig there. I think that's a beautiful piece.
There's a lot going on in Fremantle at the moment. I've got this theory that you don't realise things have changed, including the reputation these places get until a good 5 years after it happened. But I think there's a lot going on here now when you walk around the different parts of Fremantle. The West End's the West End, and there's still buildings happening there. But that area around Clancy's and going further north along Adelaide and so on, there's a lot of development happening.
I love to see the apartments that are springing up. I'm a big fan of higher density living. I think it's fantastic that, Fremantle's this great hub for small, you know, that the tiny house movement seems to have a really natural home here. But I really like the apartments. I like that these, you know, old crumbling warehouses are being turned into something where people can live.
People can go and live.
Old crumbling people can go and live. And I love that there's still housing, you know, right near those beautiful new apartments that overlook the harbour, there's some low-cost living as well, and you just get that really nice mix. I think that's important.
So is there anything in particular that you dream of Fremantle doing, having, developing into, or is it really just a continuation of what is here?
I just love to sail along with whatever happens in my little town. I don't think I've ever really been the sort of person that has a vision for what it should be, and I think the fact that it has in part kind of bumbled along with change, and I'm sure there's a lot of vision and organisation, and I'm really glad about that, but I don't like to think about how that happens too much. I just like to kind of, you know, be in it and watch things happening around me and not think too much about planning issues that I'm sure lots of people have to think about because they're paid to. I would, you know, I'd, as long as it keeps its character, I think.
It's an interesting thing, character, isn't it? You know it's lost or changed when you see it.
Well, everything's...
Now, you mentioned Fremantle and music earlier. Yeah. Are you musical?
I am a shocking musician. I come from a very creative family and I missed out on most of those chips, I think. But I like to play the ukulele. I play the baritone ukulele. When I say play the baritone ukulele, I'm very bad at it. I have very little talent, but...
Is this a baritone ukulele right next to us here?
This is my baritone. I have to
If we
say,
had vision, it'd be something, but it looks very new.
Beautiful. No, it's not that new. I have to thank Lucy Peach for this because she's come into the studio a few times to play and I love her.
It's got a very Hawaiian-sounding name on it or something. What's that?
Ohana?
Oh, well, just another
name. I spent ages looking around for the particular one that she played, but I couldn't find one. So I found this one.
So did you select the baritone ukulele for some particular reason?
Yes, because Lucy put me onto the ukulele to start with, so I have a couple of those at home. My granddaughter actually got my first one very Bond Scott-like and lifted it, gave it a little, you know, strum and then lifted it overhead and broke it. But, you know, she was enjoying herself. Anyway, Lucy had, it came in and she was playing a baritone ukulele. She was playing a ukulele, but it just had a beautiful sound. And I said to her, I love that. And she said, oh, it's a baritone. And it's got the same chords as a guitar. And it just has a deeper sound, so I really like it. So I don't sound as awful as I normally do when I play it. I still sound pretty awful.
So do you have a party piece?
Not really without my music. I really like Sunday Morning by the Velvet Underground.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And so you're going to play that for us now?
A couple of
chords there from.
Sunday morning brings the dawn in. It's just a restless feeling by my side.
Well, that was beautiful.
Your ears will bleed.
You know, this could go entirely viral. Now, listen.
Yeah.
When you conduct your radio programs,
yeah.
Let's just turn to that for a minute.
All right.
Because you become really quite famous and a very favourite presenter on the ABC, I sometimes still call it 6WF, 7:20 afternoons. And do you just love doing that?
I love doing that, yeah, of course I do. Who wouldn't love doing that? It's just.
And for people who don't know what happens, what's the pitch if you were trying to create a program like that? How would you describe it?
Well, we can do anything we like, which I think makes it the best ABC Radio Perth program to listen to. We can have a lot of fun. You would call it a magazine show, but I hate that. I immediately think of...
It sounds too contrived or something.
Yeah, it really does. I think of afternoon television talk shows when I do that, but... I just get to talk to people, which is lovely. We get to talk to all sorts of really interesting, talented, famous people, which is fantastic. But the stories I really like are the people you meet who live here who have just amazing stories, amazing lives, amazing experiences, and there's just nothing like the feeling of... Now, you would know this when you're talking to someone and you just feel like you've really connected and you're not on radio anymore, you're just having a really beautiful conversation and you love it. I think that's just such a special place to be. And that sounds very trite, doesn't it?
But it doesn't. There are lots of really interesting, wonderful and positive people amidst the doom and gloom sometimes.
Yeah, and we get to do a lot of those and I think it's a wonderful thing. We get really saturated with negativity, I think, in any media organisation because it's just all around you and you need to stay in touch with what's happening in the world and what's happening in Australia and what's happening locally. But I think amid all of that, there are always, you know, there's always a core of good people doing good things or, you know, fighting their own battles, and they're the stories that I really love.
So what preparation typically do you have to do and what does your work day look like?
Oh, well, the workday's a big one. We do a lot of preparation, all leading to the fact that you need to be able to fling it out the window if you do make one of those gorgeous connections that you occasionally do in conversation and you just want to go with that. But I get in about 7 o'clock in the morning. I read all the online newspapers. We choose stories for the day or talking points for the day. And if I've got interviews that are set, then if it's a big interview, if it's an author or something like that, then I have a producer who will work with me, but I like to do the research for that myself because, again, if you want to have a conversation, you want to be looking at someone, not, you know, reading from a list of questions. You Absolutely. Want to know, yeah, you want to know enough about them that you can just go off on whatever tangent that you need to go, yeah.
Is that something you can learn to stay with an interviewee, the interview subject? Or does it come naturally?
What do you mean?
Well, do you have to work at a skill to interview?
I think the hardest thing about radio when you're in the middle of an interview is listening. And I think when you're working on radio, particularly these days when you have so much that you have to think about, so there's all the... We run our own desks, which is fun. So you're panelling, you're looking at text messages, you're looking at phone lines, you're looking at the different sort of carts or stings or music that you might be playing next. You've got information coming up on the screen that you might need to talk about, might be something like a crash on the Kwinana Freeway, you know, but you just need to be aware that something might pop up there that you need to think about quickly. And you're often looking at Facebook and Twitter as well. So I think the thing that you really need to do that is probably the hardest skill, because all of those things you can teach, is really just focusing when you're talking to somebody, is really focusing on them and listening and just being, I mean, it's really obvious, simple things. It's just being, as you would know, being curious and being interested, you know.
Well, that is, and listening, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think the future of radio is, or for that matter, the future of television? Well, do you have a take on this as someone who works in this whole communications media area?
Yeah, look, I think it's really hard to tell. I think if there was anyone out there who had a clear idea of what radio and television would look like in 5 years or 10 years, they'd be making a lot of money, because I don't think there's anyone who really knows. I think people will always want to feel connected to their community. I think people will always want to know what's going on around them, in the world, in their suburb, in their town, in their city, in their state, in their country. How they do that is another thing. And I think, you know, what I love about radio is that it's company, you know. I think you can turn on the radio and feel like, particularly when it's local radio, I sound like I'm giving you a pitch now, don't I? But I feel this and I believe it. I feel like, you know, you can switch that on and you feel like there's someone that you connect to. If you don't connect to, you can switch the dial, can't you?
Yeah. But it's someone typically who's in your neighbourhood.
Yeah.
Whether it's a big neighbourhood like Perth or a smaller neighbourhood like Fremantle.
Mm, exactly. And that to me is the gorgeous thing about radio.
And what about, you mentioned community radio earlier and your mother's experience in that. And is community radio bound to survive? Does it have a particular role to play?
Oh, absolutely. I think community radio is massively important. I know when 6NR, which is now Curtin Radio, was set up, there was really, there was commercial radio and there was the ABC, but there was nowhere at that time in the 70s for Indigenous radio, I don't think there was anywhere that where British soccer was broadcast. There was no radio groups for any of the ethnic groups that we had around Perth, and there's a lot of them, a lot of people who also want to feel connected and feel part of the community. And that was a great place for community radio, and also for, you know, niche music, for people who wanted to listen to country music in the morning, and RTR does this so well, I think, with local music and different kinds of music. I think they really connect with and address those kind of niches. I think the ABC does that really well as well, but I think there's a place for all radio. I'd hate to see anything happen to community radio. It's really important.
Now, do you have any particular ambitions at the moment, or are we going to listen to you on afternoon radio for a long time to come?
Well, who knows, Michael? I don't know. My ambition is, I feel so grateful and lucky to still be in a job that I love. That changes enough to keep it interesting. So at the moment, it's, full steam ahead.
And your musical career as a baritone ukulele player, is that going anywhere?
Well, not if my friend Sam, who's Niall Lucy's wife, Niall passed a few years ago. Sam, who keeps a water pistol to keep her cats in line, she will just squirt me in the face whenever I pick it up. Such is the horror of my playing. But no, I just play it because I like to sit on my back deck with my husband, who plays beautiful guitar, and plunk along. It just relaxes me.
Well, look, thank you for talking to Fremantle Shipping News, for telling us about your love of Fremantle, for playing and singing. You've got a very sweet voice, if I may say so.
I'm surprised it hasn't cracked your phone.
Now, there's only one other question that I'm bound to ask you. You've got the most wonderful laugh on radio, and where did that come from?
Oh, my dad says I sound like a rabid hyena when I laugh. When I was a kid, if I laughed too much at the dinner table, he'd make me go and sit on the back porch with the dog and eat my dinner because I wasn't allowed to sit. I have absolutely no idea. I can't stand the sound of my laugh. You know, if I edit interviews...
You cut it out, do you?
I often will sit there and I listen to it in my headphones and I think, you know, most people hate the sound of their own voices and I am no different because it always sounds, you know, totally different in your head than it does when you hear it on radio, and I'm always clipping out my laugh because I think, oh my goodness, you do sound like a hyena.
Well, I can assure you don't, and if you didn't have it, there'd be a lot of people who'd be very unhappy. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck with your local ukulele. That's a hard word to say.
Ukulele lady.
Ukulele lady. Well, exactly. Well, that's an ambition to to hold. And thank you, and we'll see you about.
Thank you, Michael.